You're Don Bradman, a podcast from SBS. In each episode, we'll have a look at champions, athletes, idolized by millions, that you might not know about. The kind of champion or hero next door. Welcome to Who's Your Don Bradman?
Welcome to Who's Your Don Bradman? I'm Dario Castaldo and I'm joined by Christophe Mallet. Welcome back, Christophe.
Yeah, thank you, Dario. We're going to talk cycling as well. So brilliant.
Not just cycling, because in this episode, we will explore a time through the eyes of an athlete, a woman that even today divides the nation, idolized as the first super cycling champion from France. She's also seen as a picture of what was wrong about cycling at the time, and also as someone that had such an impact on the sport that only several decades after, only nowadays, the sport itself is emerging from her mark. In this episode, we're going to France. Our tour guide will be Christophe Mallet, and we're going to talk about Jeannie Longo. Why she deserved to be part of our Who's Your Don Bradman podcast series.
Because as you said in the introduction, she still divides the nation. And we will explore this in this podcast today. Those are the findings I had while I was exploring the role as an icon of the sport in France for this episode. When you think about women cycling, even today, the general public will tell you Jeannie Longo. This is the first name that comes to mind, even though she retires for many years. At the Tour de France, the first edition of the Tour de France Femmes in July 2022, she was honored with an honorary yellow jersey. She was up on a pedestal. She was up on the stage. But when you start digging a little bit more in the world of cycling, well, people might not exactly think that way. There is a lot of negative talk about Jeannie Longo in the world of cycling. She was celebrated on a global stage, but yet again, on the niche stage of cycling, her own world, she's not liked at all. So this is what we're going to explore today in this podcast, Dario. This is a controversy episode.
Actually, people think about Jeannie Longo even in Italy when they talk about women cycling, because she was the one who dethroned Maria Canins. Mm-hmm. I hope we're going to mention her in this episode. But let's start listening to the story of Jeannie Longo.
Jeannie Longo was born on October 1958 in the French Alps. She was a gifted skier, so much so that she reached the level of the French university team. But it was only at the age of 20 that Jeannie finally traded her skis for a bike. She would tell you that she almost came to cycling by accident. She was using her bike in the summer to keep fit, but then she was a skier first and foremost. And one day, she was advised to take a cycling license to, as she says, see what it would be like. The rest is history, as they say. In 1978, she was 21, and she claimed her first French road championship. Overall, Jeannie Longo dominated world cycling. She won 13 world titles, an Olympic victory in Atlanta in 1986, a silver medal on the road in Barcelona in 1992. She was nicknamed the Terminator on a bike. Fast forward to 2011, her career took an unpleasant turn. She was suspected of doping after having failed three times, mentioning her whereabouts and the obligations that go with it in the context of the fight against doping. She will then be cleared by the French Federation on disciplinary proceedings. But the allegations left their mark on her career. It took her 7 years to finally talk about that time openly and realize how much damage this has done to her. If Jeannie Longo marked the history of women cycling through her sporting exploit, she's above all a model of a woman freed from all sexism and macho codes. She was not always very diplomatic. She yelled at everyone. Those are the words of Lucien Bailey, a former national technical director. And it was a character she forged at a time when women cycling was steeped in sexism. Cycling is also a woman's sport, a physical and tactical sport. It's beautiful, a woman on a bike, she famously stated in a French newspaper after being bullied by two French cycling icons, Marc Madiot and Laurent Fignon. In 2017, her husband, Patrick Ciprelli, was found guilty of importing EPO, an illegal doping substance, and was ordered out of the sport. Although not officially linked with this, it was the end of Jeannie's professional career. After remaining discreet for many years, Jenny was the guest of honor at the start of the Tour de France Femmes in July 2022. In a preamble, she made a point of affirming that the Grand Boucle Féminine 2022 was not the first of the name, and it was just resuscitated. She wanted respect for the history that her and the like of Marianne Martin, Maria Canins, did to the sport between 1984 and 1989, winning the Tour de France Féminin. Jenny Longo is still vocal in a way women's discipline is looked at. We are in a society where women have to fight to be recognized. We have to excel. When during a race you fall off your bike, it's because you're clumsy. We never say this about a man. Female cycling is worth the male spectacle, and we are beginning to realize it, she said before the start of the Tour de France Femmes. Overall, as I said, Jenny Longo won 13 world titles, 59 national titles, as well as setting the hour record in 2000 and winning the Olympic gold in 1996. This was the story of Jenny Longo.
So that was the story of Jenny Longo. Christophe, we have a lot to unpack by the look of it. So where do we start?
Yeah, exactly. But you know, instead of starting at the beginning of her career, I just want to maybe start from now and where she's at now. She lives in a farm, in the French Alps, on the top of the French Alps. She's a bit of a monk amongst the animals. She lives a life far away from modernity. And to get to her is a real challenge. In fact, I actually failed to do so. And you know, Dario, how hard I can work and how painful I can be for other people if I want to have an interview with someone, where I actually failed to talk to Jenny Longo. I could not get hold of her. And that is not just me. There's many journalists that tried exactly the same way, and it was hard to get hold of her. But one person I know that did is Benoit Furic. He's a journalist for the well-known newspaper L'Équipe, and he actually explains how and why this is difficult to get in touch with her.
She's very proud about her career. She's still enjoying riding now, but without GPS, by example. She's riding on feelings. She's like a bit out of this time, you know? She's like a bit, yeah, not really involved in our modern time. You know, to reach Jenny Longo, you have three solutions. You have to call her on a GSM, but it's very hard because the network is not working sometimes. His GSM is like a phone in his house, and she's not bringing it with her. Okay. You have to call direct on his remote chalet, but sometimes she is not here or she doesn't want to answer. And you can send an email, but the response is not certain.
We heard from Benoit Furic, the journalist from the newspaper L'Équipe. In this regard, Jenny Longo reminds me a bit of a friend of mine who's been quite out of reach recently. Tell us more about her story, Christophe.
Jenny Longo came late in the sport of cycling. Actually, she started as a skier, and she likes to remind herself that she started in a different sport. But let's understand the mindset you needed to have to back yourself up in the 1980s in a sport like women's cycling. Women's sports professional was almost non-existent. Maybe there was a few sports, maybe practically, I know you like tennis, for example, had a professional element, but that was absolutely not the case for women cycling, and certainly not in Europe, as explains Benoit Furic again.
She created a team in the middle of the 80s. She worked with the French Federation to improve the level, to move forward for better conditions for her and for her colleagues. So, yeah, maybe not in Europe because, you know, during the 80s, there was Maria Canins also. There was some other riders, but in France, she's a key figure and she improved all the European scene, really.
I'm personally happy that Benoit Furic mentioned Maria Canins right away. Let's move on. So how was basically women racing in those times?
So women's racing, yeah, was a fight. It was a battle. And in fact, the racing was actually based a lot in the US. The US had decades. They were lights ahead compared to what we were experiencing here at the time in Europe. Because pretty much every race had a men's and a women's element as well.
So how would you describe Jenny Longo as a competitor? Of course, you mentioned she was fierce. Of course, we said that she was tough. But as a rider, what was she like?
Oh, she was sneaky, Dario. She was very tricky as a rider. And to understand the level of battle that was happening in that field at the time, let's talk to Inga Thompson. She rode against Jenny Longo.
I know that there's a good side of her, but when she was around me, she had her race side. Well, so did I. And there are the mind games, and the mind games are part of sports. And so it never bothered me to play the mind games. Like, I'm quite a bit taller than she is. And I would, it's sports. You start asking questions that I knew that would annoy her very much. But it's part of the tactics of trying to win. And or like if we'd get on a really steep hill, I'd start talking to her. And I know she didn't appreciate that, and that's why I did that. It's sport to try to figure out how to psych out your teammate. Or, she would attack, and then I'd counterattack her, and then I'd counterattack her teammate. And I don't think she was prepared for that, because she was so used to being so strong and dominating that I enjoyed not being intimidated by her and trying to challenge her every chance I could.
We also mentioned that things changed in 1984. It seems like the Olympics in Los Angeles played a key role for the development of women's cycling. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. And if we look back at the time, cycling in the US, as we mentioned, were driven by that decision by the Los Angeles Olympics to have a women's road race. So these Olympics were a real catalyst for it. And let's listen to Jill Jenko. She was an American rider, and she explains really well the time and place that was.
I started racing at the very beginning of the 1980s, and it was, it was there. There were races, but when Los Angeles got the Olympic bid, and I was living and racing in Los Angeles in 1983, the year before, poof, you could see that everything just exploded. It was, the first time they had the women's road race, and Americans won 1-2 in that race, and that brought a lot of attention to cycling. We also had the Coors Classic and the Ore-Rida road races, and a lot of the European women would come over and do those because the prize money was just much more robust than it was in Europe, and that brought a ton of attention to cycling in general. The 80s were such a great time to be a woman cyclist. I raced in the United States and Canada, and every weekend you could find any variety of races. You could race the track, you could find criteriums, you could find road races. I mean, racing was just alive in the United States. The 80s, in my opinion, were just the best time for cycling.
So that was Jill Jenko. Let's listen again from another US rider. We heard her a little bit earlier, Inga Thompson. And she will actually describe a little bit later in this podcast the rivalry between herself and Jenny Longo. But for now, let's see how she lived through that era of cycling.
It was really difficult because we didn't have a lot of teams and a lot of support, and we weren't paid. And so we would work, several jobs in order to make enough money to go to the next race and try to train while you were still racing. And so, like when we came to the Tour de France, we had to get our own plane tickets, and you got here, and this was before the cell phone and before GPS and before you just got on an airplane and you said goodbye to your mother and your father, and you saw them again in a few months unless you had some nickels in your pocket to call your parents. It was spectacular. It was we ran right in front of the men. And so our races might have been shorter than the men, but the men had all of this long, flat area to kind of ride out before they started the mountain passes. They started us right at the bottom of the mountain passes. And so we got to have all of the same finishes as the men. It was spectacular. But this is something I'd like people to know, is that year in 1986, Maria Kanin's overall winning time was only 0.6 mph slower than Greg LeMond's, or 1 km/h slower than Greg LeMond's. And people say, well, the women didn't ride as far. And I say, well, the men had 200 racers in their field, and we had maybe 80. And of those 80, maybe 40 of us, you know, were actually supported while being there. And so I was so proud of the women that had less support than I had. I mean, they're really the heroes, the ones that they suffered more than I did.
So as we understand, the life of a woman rider in these days was not easy. Inge Thompson again.
When we first started racing this, all we ever heard was women can't. It was the kitchen races. It was the skirt races and all the reasons why we shouldn't be racing. I remember arguing with the president at the time of the Union Cycliste International, UCI, and they were telling us that they were probably going to start mandating if you started your menstrual cycle that they weren't going to allow you to race. And I said, well, what are you going to know? There isn't a single woman here that's going to confess to being on her menstrual cycle. I mean, what are you going to do before the race? Panty check? And, you know, and so we really fought to be here, to have the equality to, you have to start somewhere. And I call it build it and they will come. And I know when I was young, I was always told that there was no sports for women. And in 1984, we were told that they had the very first women's Olympics ever, the 1984 cycling road race. And then they were going to have the very first women's Tour de France ever. And I was in college on a running scholarship. And I thought, this is what I want to do. I've always loved the bike. And so I went and I was supposed to go to Australia and I was going to get a job on a cattle ranch. And instead of going to Australia and get the job on the cattle ranch, I took that money and I bought a bicycle. And 3 months later, I made an Olympic team. But I remember telling people that I was going to do the Tour de France. And they said, women can't do the Tour de France. And I said, just you watch me.
Yeah, you watch me. You see, that's the attitude that was needed to fight down all those boundaries at the time. And Gianni Longo was a personality in this world. She was a free spirit.
Oh, yeah. In France, definitely she was. Definitely. Yeah. In fact, she created a team in the middle of the 80s. She worked with the French Federation to improve the level, to move forward for better conditions for her and for her colleagues. So, yeah, maybe not in Europe because, you know, during the 80s, there was Maria Kanins also. There was some other riders, but in France, she's a key figure, and she improved all the European scene, really. Oh yeah, she's characterful. When, by example, when her pieces arrived in the peloton, she was against that, and she's still against that because she told me, okay, it's for no brainer rider. It's like it's not riding to use her piece, and When she was riding in a pro peloton, when she was attacking on the left on the road, all the peloton was, yeah, Gianni is attacking on the left and Longo is attacking on the left, and she was angry about that. She doesn't like it. Yeah, she doesn't like it. In fact, to understand who is that Gianni Longo, you have to understand she was riding and studying both in the early 80s. It's not like now you have professional rider and rider are dedicated to pro cycling. At the time, she was studying in Grenoble and she was training during midday at the velodrome, and she was trying to manage both sides of this life. And it was a hard life because she told me, yeah, at the time, women riders was a student or a mummy, but maybe both of them, but it was hard to fully riding bicycle. So if you are this in mind, it explains a lot about Gianni Longo because she was a hard racer, she was a hard rider, but she had to fight to keep a place in a peloton and to develop his sport.
So that was Benoît Furic again from the newspaper L'Équipe.
This is kind of the bright side, but you also mentioned before, Christophe, some controversies around Gianni Longo. What were they like?
How long have we got for this? So many, just to name a few, there's so many controversies here. But we'll pass on the question of doping or not. This is not my point here. Let's talk about how Jenny Longo was seen in a peloton at the time. So first, let's hear again from Jill Jenko and her first encounter with Jenny Longo.
You know, once was enough to race against Jenny. She was fearsome. She wanted to win everything. And I remember being on the line. This was at the World University Games in 1983 in Edmonton, Canada, and I was just in awe of her. She had that look like, I am just going to defeat you all. And we tried to make small talk with her, and she had like no interest in that. She's just like, I'm focused on this race that I want to win. And people tell me she hasn't changed all that much.
And you understood one of her rivals we heard before as well was Inga Thompson. Let's see what she was thinking of her back in the days.
I really enjoyed racing Jeannie. We had a lot of races where I would beat her and she would beat me, and we would go back and forth. She'd get me in the sprint. I would out-climb her. I could out-time trial her. So like when you look at the 85 and the 86 Coors Classic, you'll see a battle between the two of us. You know, and there were words exchanged where, you know, I got really aggressive with my racing and I was beating her quite a bit. And then she'd say, oh, it is not fair. And I'm like, we're not picking on you. This is called bike racing. And my job isn't to be here and to be nice to you. My job is to race hard and to give it my best to try to beat you. And I'm going to try to beat you. And sometimes I would and sometimes I wouldn't. But I don't think that she was used to being beat as much as she was by me. I mean, she still ended up winning the Coors Classic. But I beat her on quite a few stages, and I think she wasn't used to that. And then in 87, you know, she took another giant step forward, and after that, I couldn't touch her. Yeah, no, after that, I couldn't touch her. Sometimes I could get her, but not like I could before when I was younger.
How do you think, and how the people you spoke to think that Jenny Longo is remembered today? And what do you think her legacy is? How is she going to be remembered in the years to come?
The question is, how was Jenny Longo at the time? We spoke to Jean-François Quenet. He's one of the main voices you hear around the Tour de France if you actually go to the event. But he also is a real encyclopedia for cycling.
Locally, everywhere in the traditional regions of cycling in Europe, women cycling picked up. And Jenny Longo was quickly the benchmark. As soon as she started cycling, she was winning almost everything she wanted. It was the beginning of professional cycling for women. She created a team, but she also made sure that the team was only about herself, and she pretty much destroyed the team as well. And she destroyed the concept of team racing in women cycling. Probably because of her, women cycling has not been good for three decades. And it has taken a long time to overcome the Jenny Longo syndrome. No, how do we say it in French? The tree that hides the forest. So she was the tree, and she made sure that there was no forest behind. She wanted to be the only one, and she succeeded in that way. And also her comebacks made her being alone. And a key point was also politics. She was involved in politics. She was openly a supporter of the right side, and she pulled all those strings to be a professional athlete, paid by the state, which was not officially happening, but she was a professor of sport, so she was entitled to a state job. And because she was an athlete of very high level, she was exempted to go to work. And probably she didn't want to go to work, so she kept on racing. And because she kept on racing, nobody else could perform. So every time we have seen a new female cyclist, we have thought, maybe this one can challenge Jenny Longo. But no, because she was the only one who had all the professional facilities. And then the pretty good ones quit after 3 years of medium successes.
No small words here by Jean-François, and he tells us even more when it comes to career and how Gianni Longo also probably negatively impacted careers of other riders like Cathy Marshall.
Cathy Marshall, in a recent interview in Denmark, because Cathy Marshall relocated to Denmark and she was also the national coach when Didriksen was the world champion. Cathy Marshall revealed that Gianni Longo fainted looking after her. In reality, she destroyed her career. And you have this world championship in 1994 in Sicily, where Cathy Marshall is going to win, and Gianni Longo chases her down, and a Norwegian girl wins, Monica Valvik. And the president of the French Federation at the time, Daniel Ball, announced that Gianni Longo was not eligible for the French national team anymore. But thanks to politics, that didn't happen. Gianni Longo came back and she did a few Worlds and an Olympics, and that became the never-ending story of Gianni Longo and nobody else.
But overall, this is what we love about the story of Gianni Longo and why we have Gianni Longo today in this edition of Who's You Don Broadman. There are a lot of controversies. There is nothing bland around this. And today, of course, we are left with her palmarès also. And Benoît Furyk talks about this.
She's a major figure for cyclism. That's true. And she's a major figure because she started to develop cyclism in France. She started to win title and many titles because she won 13 world titles, 4 on tracks, 9 on road, because she had 5 titles on the road race and 4 on time trial. So it's a major, major figure. And she can, and I think the fact of Tour de France is very important because during the small history of the first Tour de France for women, she had a very huge battle with Maria Canins, the Italian riders. And for the public, it was very interesting, you know, for French public. It was like a battle like Hinault, Fignon, you know, for men. And after that, she continued because she was an Olympic champion in Atlanta. She won many titles, national titles. In fact, she started in the early 80s and she still continues. In fact, she still continues career for championship, for Masters Championship, and she's still here. In fact, she's beyond the world of cycling now. And she was beyond the world of cycling maybe since the early 90s, because after Tour de France, she was a champion. She was a key figure for public, was enjoying her rides on Tour de France, her victories. So now she's like the grandma. She's like the grandma in a cycling world. But the feeling about her is a very mixed feeling because sometimes other riders considered she didn't let a full legacy about on his sport because she was very selfish.
So Benoît Furyk from the news, L'Équipe. And then I would add, what about the love-hate relationship with the cycling world and the general public? Jean-François Kinet again.
People who have no clue of cycling know one name of a female cyclist, and it's Gianni Longo. It's not Pauline Ferrand-Prévot or Cathy Marshall, who was the world champion at the time of Gianni Longo. It's Gianni Longo. And she did her best to be the only one known. She was very good at entering the mainstream media, whereas the other female cyclists were confined to some specialized media. And to the general public, it looked like she was just a great athlete. But for the people from cycling who experienced Gianni Longo, her ego, the way everything was about her performances, people generally hated her.
There you go. This is what we could say today on Who's You Don Broadman about Gianni Longo.
Thank you very much, Christophe. You literally took us to France today. This was Who's You Don Broadman, a podcast series by SBS Radio. We spoke about Gianni Longo today. See you next time.